I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always correct, as long as you're not talking political correctness. Bob McCowan in Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know.
It's Tuesday, December 22nd, 2015, the last and final hour for today. And we're going to spend a full hour here with our guest. It is a segment I've been looking forward to for, honestly, a year. And it has finally come to fruition a little later than I thought, but he is here. He is the former president of the Toronto Blue Jays. He is Paul Beeston, and he is in studio with us. Now, you know, 2016 will be the 40th anniversary of our relationship, such that it is, whatever the hell it is.
Well, it goes up and down, you know.
It does. It has its moments. We see each other, then we don't see each other. You play golf, then you don't play golf.
Right.
Well, play at golf.
Have you ever had a bad time playing with me, though?
Never.
That's the point.
No. Although it's a long and arduous process. Because we're constantly...
I don't ask exactly what the yardage is.
No. Well, and we do have to look for your golf balls every now and again because you're a cheap bastard. So,
yeah, right.
There's so many places I could start here. There's obviously issues that you understand that people want me to ask you about. How often do you think back to the early days? How often do you think back to 76, when you first started, when I first walked into that building, when Bavese marched into town like the cat who'd swallowed the canary, when Gillick was sitting in his little tiny office and Elliot Wally used to wander in from his little tiny office on the other side and we'd sit there and talk about baseball. And you were over on the other side.
Right.
You know, you were the bean counter.
Right.
That, you know, baseball really wasn't your function. In the very early days.
Correct.
How often do you think back on those days?
Well, I think back quite often because of the people that were involved. It's funny that you talk about it. I mean, I saw Elliot Wally last Friday night at a cocktail reception for someone who was turning 70, you know, so that's the era
wow.
that we're in right now.
Yeah.
But when, you know, we always refer to Bobby Maddox, we refer to Peter Hardy, we say, what would they do right now? So it brings you back to where you were at that time, Bob. I mean, and from my point of view, you know, it was building. I mean, this was the game at that point in time was what we were selling. The Blue Jays were tough to sell because, as you know, we didn't have a great team. I mean, you know, we were a AAA team, and that was what the decision was to build the team from there. But you think back on it, fondly, because it was kind of a kinder, gentler time. You know, it was not the business that it is right now. It is, you know, right now there's a lot of risk, whether it's long-term contracts and the money that's given out, whether it's, you know, the cost of stadiums, what you're doing with television ratings, all of those things that come into it make it a little bit of a different kind of dynamic. Now, having said that, back then, you know, we were kind of a break-even type of a company, but it didn't really matter. What we were building something, and we had good people and good character, and we were small, and everybody knew everybody. I mean, even when we won the World Series, only 58 people. I mean, that was the front office, okay? Now, when you count the Rogers Center, you count everything else, you're now talking 250 to 275 people, which, you know, we didn't own the Rogers Center at the time.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you know, we didn't have those employees. But I think back on it fondly because I think back on the people that impacted my life so significantly, like Hardy, like Gillick, like Maddock, like Al Lamaki, Moose Johnson. You can bring up these names. These were legitimate long-term baseball people that, you know, that gave me my, you know, mentorship and kind of education.
I'm guessing you know the answers to these questions. You remember what the payroll was the first year?
Yeah, $817,000, of which Billy Singer had $105,000 of it. Yeah. I would know it if it was as if it was yesterday. Okay. And, you know, those were the days when you go to arbitration over $3,000.
God. Did you see what baseball would become, what sports would become back then? Did you much time thinking about it?
I don't think anybody really did. I think we were all fortunate to be in the game. I think we all kind of looked at how it was growing, whether it was baseball, whether it was football in the NFL, how it was going. Yeah, we said, you know, when you got to a $1 million contract, there's not going to be $1.5 to $2 million contract. Then we get to $3 million with Kirby Puckett, you know, and then there's not going to be anything more than that. Then you got to, you know, the $5 and the $10 million contracts. And, you know, at the very end of the day, I mean, I don't think anybody should be surprised about anything they read right now. I mean, because, you know, it seems to be, you know, just escalating on a regular basis and, you know, drifting up. I mean, it's not spiking up, it's drifting up. And as revenue comes in, it is a fact. And you can say it what you want. Ownership is a conduit, particularly in baseball where there's no salary cap. Baseball is a conduit for, you know, taking the money in and distributing it to the players. I mean, that's what it is. So the more money you bring in, the more money is going to go out. Everyone wants to be kind of in that break even. And there has been obviously an increase in franchise values. There's no question about that. I mean, no, you just look at what franchises are sold for right now. And you sit back and you say to yourself, you know, this is, you know, the ultimate business to be in a lot of ways, because it's a sport, which makes it fun. And it's a business, which makes it a challenge.
Can you sit here today and say there'll never be a $100 million a year contract?
$100 million? I would say the answer to that is, not in my lifetime, but I will say there will be at one point. Who knows, Bob? I mean, you're now looking at, where have we gone? We've gone from 30 to 31, 32, 33, okay? No, but you're looking at it. So, I mean, it's going up. And when's the next $40 million? Well, the $40 million barrier is coming. I mean, there's not even a question about that. For the right player at the right time, that is the right free agent, that person is going to get that kind of money at some point in time.
Sure.
There is no evidence that they won't. And you know what? And someone will pay it, and they will gladly play it, and hopefully that the guy actually performs. Because the only thing is, and I know I've been criticized for this, and I take it, and I understand why people say it, that's why you don't sign over five-year deals. Because it's tough to perform for those 5 years and project out. And so now all of a sudden you've mortgaged your future. So if, in fact, you were to look at contracts and you were to take the AAV and say it's $32 million, if, in fact, you think that guy's going to pitch for 4 or 5 years, but you're paying him that much more money, that $40 million contract may,
already
in fact,
exists.
Be there. Sure,
it
exactly.
Right now.
Exactly.
Sure. I don't know what David Price is going to be 5 years from now.
Well, if there's one guy that you might want to bet on, I mean, that David Price stays in shape. You know, he doesn't go on the DL. He's got the right attitude. So it's the mental attitude, because he actually is one of those guys, much like I always thought Kirby Puckett should be the highest paid player in the game, because Kirby Puckett treated the fans well and looked like he enjoyed the game. Like he enjoyed the game and he performed at a high level. David Price, for the little bit that we saw him here, you know, we got a taste of what that's all about. When you have an athlete that actually comes in, enjoys the game, makes everybody around him better. Like, not just the guys on the field, but everybody in the clubhouse, the manager, the management, the fans, everybody. I mean, he's a special guy. And, you know, quite honestly, you start looking at it, you know, there's no reason to think that, you know, he's not going to perform all the way through. Now, we'll find that out, because it's a lot longer than I would have paid him, because you could say I'm arguing against myself. But once you break that policy, of over the 5 years or 6 years, take whatever your policy might be, you know, you can go on forever and, you know, just pay and pay and pay.
If you were not on your way into your next whatever it is you're doing.
Right.
Would you have tried to sign David Price?
Well, it's a very interesting concept. When you've got David Price and you're going to talk about him, you know, you'd have obviously want to try to push it. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, how do we know that they didn't? I mean, that's the one question. The fact that they have said, you know, that we didn't get him, I don't know how hard they pushed it or whether they had any conversations with him. I mean, it indicated they haven't, but, you know, they must have kicked tires somewhere along the line.
I'm not privy to that.
But the answer to that is I wouldn't have broken the five-year rule, and it would be nice if you get him. But you know what? These guys are not coming in here to try to lose. I mean, they've got a pretty good team right now. I mean, they've got a team on the field that is going to be better than the team on the field that started at the beginning of last year. I mean, there is no question, because you've got Rivera, you've got Tulowitzki.
Assuming health.
Well, assuming health, but on paper,
I grant.
I mean,
you
know, you and you've got Pilar, who now is a bona fide center fielder. I think you know we can say that you know everything is there. You got Revere, you know, you've got Tulowitzki. You now have got you know Goins. You know, we can know can play defense and basically can do. You know, he can hit okay too. You know, he's not going to be your power hitter, but you know, no. Fact of the matter is,
he can hit .250.
Between he and Devon Travis, I mean, you've got something there. And then you know you've got Osuna and Sanchez that now have hit the full year. And so you got to see how the pitching comes along. But they're going to outscore a lot of teams. And you know what? Quite frankly, I think it's going to be a pretty exciting team right now. And so, you know, when you have a David Price there and you, you know, have the opportunity to talk to him, I mean, you know, everyone has their own way of doing things, but they're obviously managing it to the way they think they can do it. Maybe, I don't know what Mark is thinking in the respect of length of contracts, but I'll tell you one thing, you know, he's had some pretty good success. He's had some pretty good success with pitchers. I mean, you look at the Cleveland pitching staff, it's a pretty good pitching staff. One of the better ones.
Well, maybe we'll get into some Mark Shapiro conversations. My sense of that hire is maybe different from yours, but let's put that on the back burner. In no particular order, because we started talking about Price, take me back to June, July of this past year. At some point, you and Alex have a conversation. Alex comes to you and says, this is what I'm thinking of doing. This is what I'd like to do. This is what might be available to us. And in doing this, it's a gamble because in order to execute, you're going to have to give up a lot of your futures, a lot of your young players. At that point, when the decision ultimately was made, did your future and Alex's future, which at that time looked like they were might be tied together.
Yeah. It might.
Well, I mean, quite honestly, it looked like Alex probably wasn't going to get renewed, and we already knew that you were, you know, on your way. Did that play a role in the decision-making process?
Absolutely 100% not. I mean, not that way at all. Look, I mean, we were all in 2013. I mean, when we made the trades, and Alex did those trades, I still couldn't believe that he was able to get Reyes at the time. He was able to get Burley. Hey, you're getting Johnson. You're getting Bonifacio. You know, and then to be able to do the Dickey deal, you know, bring them over here. You know, and I don't think anybody really thought in 2013 that, you know, that we didn't have a good team. It didn't turn out that way in 2013 because we won 73 games. But going into the season.
You thought you had a team that was going to win the division.
We had a team that was going to be a contender. Okay, maybe not competitive, a contender. Who knows who's going to, you know, win at the end, but, you know, that we could be there. And so I guess what I would say to you on this one, Bob, is that, you know, we put ourselves in that position at that time when we traded the Syndergaards that are pitching well now, you know, the Mariznicks, and Alex pulled that thing off brilliantly. You know, 2014, you know, we were better than we did in 2013, but then we got here. We owed it to the fans. We didn't owe it to, you know, it wasn't like, you know, it was done for Alex Anthopoulos or Paul Beeston or anybody there. There was no selfishness in this thing about moving on forward. And I will dispute that anyone ever thinks that, because that's not what it was all about. What it was all about was we could get Tulowitzki, who was, you know, under control for a number of years. I think he's got 5 years and, you know, after this one, you know, and Alex pulled that off. He'd been working on that for a year. Mm-hmm. And then it was off, and then it was on, then it was off, then it was on. And it was so off that when I left the office at 6:30 that night, it was off. And by the time I got home, it was back on, and it was done that night. And, you know, give him marks. I mean, he was relentless in doing what he was doing. I mean, it was fantastic. But once he got Tulowitzki, and now Price became available, and, you know, which who knows why he became available, but, you know, Dave Dombrowski was, you know, after Cabrera went down, you know, Dave Dombrowski was at that point in time going to change things. And so he became available. And the thing that is not ever mentioned is the fact that since 2013, when, you know, we actually emptied the farm system in some respects, we kept a few players, but we emptied the farm system in other respects, you know, he was able to rebuild it.
He rebuilt it back up
because what he was trading were futures, okay? Mm-hmm. And who knows how they're going to do. But he had built the farm system back up through good scouting, through good development, and put us in a position where he could actually make those trades. I mean, so that was the beauty of what happened. But it wasn't done for anything else, because once you got that, you got Price. Okay, now, He doesn't know at this point he can get Lowe. He doesn't know at this point he can get Revere, although I'm sure that he'd had discussions with him. But all of a sudden, you know, in the matter of 4 days, I mean, is there a general manager has ever had a week like he had? And forget the week.
Never.
Forget the 4 days. Just look at the 4 days, you know, that you could write a book about as how this was pulled off. But the fact of the matter is that once, you know, Tulowitzki came and Price became available and he could get the Price deal done at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, you got yourself in a position where you've got your pitcher right now. We didn't know Stroman was coming back. So, I mean, at that point, you know, you're kind of gambling. But you've got yourself in a position where you can actually do it. And there was a change, because the biggest thing you always have to worry about is the thing that I think happened to us in 2013. We brought in all these new players, because remember, Melky Cabrera came in that year. Mm-hmm. You know, we brought in a number of players. And quite honestly, you know, it takes time to mesh. These guys, and was it David Price that did it? Was it the fact that it was Donaldson and Russell Martin? You know, like, you know, that were kind of the leaders. Was it the fact that Burley was? I have no idea. But they came together as a team. And, you know, and the chemistry was, you know, you could feel it. We started to win. And then we started to win a little bit more, you know, and then lose a game and win a couple. You know, lose a game, win two or three more. And, you know, at the very end of the day, it was something to experience. And, you know, it was that 2 months that, you know, will go down for me as, you know, basically the highlight of, you know, my 39 years in the game.
You knew that the end was coming for you. Alex may have assumed before July 30th that the end was coming for him, too. Did you guys talk about what might happen to, you know, you knew, but what might happen to him and what his legacy was going to wind up being if this didn't work?
No, because we talked about it, you know, right after last January, you know, like, here we go. Let's give it our best this year. That's the best thing that we can do.
And see what happens.
You know, and we'll see what happens. And right from that point forward, Bob, there was nothing of this, you know, we're going to try to protect ourselves. We're going to, you know, we were going to do what we thought was right for the fans. And honestly, if these deals hadn't come together and this group hadn't been put together, I'm not so sure, you know, we'd be sitting here right now talking about what a great 2015 season it was. I mean, but we are, because it was a terrific, terrific 2.5 months. And, you know, you start looking at it and, you know, you say to yourself, you know, people that would even suggest that there was something to worry about that, because Alex, you saw what he did. I mean, Alex said, you know, I don't have a fit, you know, and so therefore I am, you know, I'm just going to take some time off right now. I'm 37 years old. And, you know, the reality of the situation is it wouldn't have mattered to him, because he's a man with confidence. You know, he's a man who's had some success now, you know, and so therefore, you know, he's got a pretty bright future. But had he not had the success, had we played well, had we got lost to Texas in the first round, or lost, you know, at the very end of the season.
Well, what if you don't make the playoffs?
We don't make the playoffs, but, you know, we win 90-some games. I mean, I think people could see, you know, what he did. I mean, because he actually didn't sit back. He didn't really, you know, look and say that, you know, we can't do that. We did everything possible to win. And that's what it's all about. Because, you know, ultimately, that's what it's about. We measured our successes in wins and losses. And, you know, in the early years of Alex, when he was learning, let's be honest about it. I mean, he took the team down. He got rid of Rios. He got rid of Wells. He got rid of Halliday. And I'm going to say rid of them. I don't mean just to dump them. I mean, you know, he took back prospects at that time. You know, and he started building it back up. And then we started to get, a little bit better. So it was a fun time.
How would you define or describe your relationship with Alex Anthopoulos?
Well, it was kind of like family, you know, and it still may well be, you know, because, you know, we're very close. We talk still on a regular basis. You know, he's friends with my family, you know, and I just like being around him. I like the energy he brings. I like the creativity that he brings. I like the fact that you, Bob McCown, can argue with him and then the two of you can quote, okay? It's not a problem. He does not mind the tension of an argument, okay? And, you know, and I don't mind the tension of an argument. So, you know, we had this wonderful, wonderful relationship. And I would hope that it would continue for many, many years to come. He's 37, I'm 70, so, you know, well, I don't know if I can hold up my end of the bargain.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because the other guy that you worked with for many, many years, of course, is Pat.
Right.
And you were approximately the same age. You were of the same generation, let's put it that
right,
way.
Right, right.
A few years difference. But
yeah, he's about 7 years older.
Yeah, not a huge
no.
amount. You know, generationally, you're right. Basically in the same place. How is that different?
Well, I think Pat was I use the word cerebral with Pat, you know, because I think that's what he was. I mean, he was more of an intellect. I mean, his mind worked a lot differently. Alex is a lot more practical from a lot of points of view.
Interesting.
You know, and Alex likes the action. He likes the negotiation. He likes, you know, the arbitrations. I mean, he likes the, you know, discussing trades and what we're going to do and moving guys in and out. I mean, you couldn't keep up with it. I was there in the very next office to him. I didn't know what 25 players we were going to have some days because, you know, he's bringing up a pitcher from Buffalo, you know, or he's gone down to New Hampshire to check somebody out because, not because he thought he could be able to use him in a trade, but because he thought he could use him up here. And, you know, the thing about Alex was, like, he likes action. Now, both of them, you know, have tremendous memories. I mean, both of them have tremendous memories, which is a huge asset for them, okay? They know what the discussion has been. They know what the players are doing. And, you know, at the very end of the day, they have a lot of similarities. They're both a little eccentric. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, they both have these eccentricities about them. But
there's a difference. I don't know if you'd agree with this. My experience with Pat was that he would counsel, he would counsel almost anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Who walked into the room. What do you think of this? What do you think of this guy? What do you think about this? He once asked me about a job offer that he got. Pulled me aside and said, I got this offer. He didn't take it. And I think I can tell everybody it was with Ted Turner. And I think you probably know about it because I'm sure he went to you. And I always assumed that if Pat was talking to me about a possible trade or a player or whatever, he was talking to everybody. He wanted a consensus, whether it was inside the office or outside the office. Alex was never that guy, at least not outside the office. Very close to the vest. He'd talk to you but wouldn't tell you anything. You're nodding. Do you disagree?
No, I think you've captured it. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I would travel with Pat. We travel around North America. We traveled actually to the Dominican many times. We went everywhere together. I mean, he would ask flight attendants. I mean, would ask anybody, and he'd be on the phone. And this is when we're not cell phones. We're talking about, you know, the quarters going ching ching ching, you know.
Yeah.
And he's got to get an opinion. But the reality of the situation is Alex is very much his own person. I mean, you know, he takes in the information and he has got the counsel. And the guys like Tony LeCavi and Terry Messina and, you know, Andrew Tenish and the group that is there, Doug Davis and Charlie Wilson, the minor leagues. I mean, those guys, you know, have impact on him. But at the very end of the day, he will get in that car of his and go for a ride. Okay, now, you wouldn't do that. You might go downstairs, you might go outside, you may do something else. He will get in that car, go for a ride, have a discussion with himself, okay, one-on-one. And then, you know, he'll eventually get on the phone. I don't know who's paying his phone bill right now, but I know it's the Blue Jays. And so this is going to hurt. That's the same as Gillick. They can't afford their phones. You know, don't have to pay them, just pay the phone bill. The reality of the situation is he's very much his old man, and he, you know, Pat wanted consensus. I mean, you know, he was like Bud. I mean, Bud was, Seelig was a consensus guy, you know, and any vote that wasn't 30-0 was a vote that, you know, that he felt failure, okay? I mean, 29-1 is a pretty good vote. 28-2 is a pretty good vote still. You know, you can make a case that 20-10 when you've got 30 owners is a good vote, okay? Bud wanted 30-0, and so did Pat, you know. But Pat had the benefit of having these really good senior guys like Maddock, like Lamacchia, like Moose Johnson, like Bob Zuck, like guys that were around that he could take counsel from because they were, you know, 25 years older than he was, you know, and they'd been around, right. They'd seen it, they worked with a lot of other teams, you know, they could do the things that were necessary. So I think at the very end of the day, Bob, well, they have a number of similarities, you know, like Alex says, this is what I want to do, you know, and, you know, he could pretty well make up his own mind. But he has listened. He takes that information in. Pat took it in, but he wanted everybody on side.
Well, yeah.
Alex took it in, and they were both successful. So how can you say one way or the other?
Right,
but you got to look at, you know, this is what the makeup is of the two individuals. Well, and, you know, whatever works for you, it works for you.
More than one way to cook fish, right?
No question.
With Paul Beeson, are you at all surprised that Alex Anthopoulos walked away from the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, I think that it would be unfair for me to talk about that, to be quite honest with you, because I think you have to ask Alex. I mean, you have to get Alex in this seat and do it right now. But
I understand. I'm not asking you why he did
right.
it. I'm just asking if you were surprised, because there was no one he was closer to,
right.
I don't think, and more of a confidant than you. And I'm not asking you to reveal right. anything. I'm just asking if you if there was an element of surprise.
Not really. I think what happened last year and then going into this year, I think, Bob, we got ourselves in a position where we were in for the 2015 season, you know, and then when it got there, I mean, Alex, you know, was, you could watch him. I told Jeff Blair this, and it's absolutely true. Like, Peter Hardy watching Pat and myself, you know, gave him, I know, great satisfaction for the, you know, the happiness that we had back in 92 and 93 and 89 and 85 and sitting back there and watching. I watched him. He was committed to this year. He didn't know what was going to happen to this year. He didn't know what direction the team was going. He only knew that I wasn't going to be there. That's the only thing. So I watched him, you know, and I watched what he was doing, and I watched how he was enjoying it. I watched, you know, how he was, you know, taking control. I mean, he grew. I mean, he grew this year. I mean, he grew from 2014, the 2015 year, right from the Donaldson trade, you know, and changing things around, and then signing Russell Martin, you know, and going to spring training. You know, he changed. I mean, like, he was in charge. I mean, you could just see it, you know, and he didn't have to sit back. So when he did and when he left, I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised. If he'd stayed, I wouldn't have been surprised either, you know. So I think that's the answer to the question. You know, he loves Toronto. He is Canadian. You know, fact of the matter is that, you know, he has made his determination to go. And I think that, you know, the questions with respect to that are better directed to him.
Fair enough. And hopefully we'll have that opportunity at some point. And
well, he can talk.
We'll oh, I know that. He can talk, but he can also talk a lot without saying very much. It's a skill that you've developed over the years, too.
And I've tried to teach him that.
And you've done an excellent job. I can applaud you for that. Let us take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to take you down history lane and take you back almost exactly a year from now and the scenario that unfolded quite to everybody's surprise and how that impacted on what happened the next 12 months or the last 12 months of this year. Paul Beeston is with us, the former president, stick former in there, of the Toronto Blue Jays. This is Primetime, coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Minutes before the hour. I'm Bob McCown. That is Paul Beeston, the former president of the Toronto Blue Jays, currently retired. He's been retired before and come out of retirement. So I'm not betting against anything. Let me take you back 12 months, maybe 13. I don't remember the exact date. A story emerges that Rogers has contacted another team about hiring your replacement. The team they, and if I'm in error in any of this, you know, all of this is secondhand. You and I have not discussed this
right
on or off the air. One of the teams, or maybe the team they contacted, happened to be owned by somebody who's a very close friend of yours and that you've known for many, many years, who calls you and says, and I'm paraphrasing, what the hell is this? Your team is calling, asking about one of my guys to replace you. Number one, did that come as a surprise to you?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is yes. I mean, you know, and through that 3 months, let's just get right to the chase. I mean, a lot of things happened. A lot of discussions happened. You know, I was committed to the organization. I was committed to the people that worked in the organization. Didn't see the necessity for that. Wanted that 1 year for 2015. You know, it expedited my decision as to, you know, like at the end of 2015, I would be gone. But the answer to that is yes.
Had you already decided that? Had you decided the end of 2015 was going
to
be the end?
Well, I thought I would look at it year to year, but 2015, you know, was after that, after what happened last year. I mean, I think, you know, we had a discussion. You know, I will stick around for 2015 to the end of the 2000, and this was in January. So I fast forwarded through November, December, and January that I would be gone at the end of the year. I would retire. You know what? And I was completely comfortable with that. I was 70 years old. I'd had a great career. We had a lot of fun. And, you know, change is sometimes very, very good. Brings in fresh eyes, brings in fresh ideas, brings in fresh ways of looking at things and implementing things. You know what? And that's why, you know, when you hear the criticism that you hear about the new regime that's in here, I don't think it's fair. I mean, you got to give them a chance. And you know what? I think they'll be successful because I think that the infrastructure is there. They've got a good team. They've got sellouts coming in right now. They've got a fan base that goes coast to coast.
But wait a second. They've inherited that.
Well, I understand. But, I mean, they can build on it, too.
You and Alex created that. And now you and Alex are not around.
Right.
To administer that and to enjoy that. And I can tell you, Beeston, without a word of a lie, I have never in 40 years of being in this chair ever seen an outpouring of emotion and anger that is even remotely close to what has been generated over the past few months. The anger on the part of Blue Jay fans coast to coast about your departure and Alex's departure is universal. And while that's not fair on Mark, it's a reality. It is an absolute fundamental reality that here we are on December 22nd. Yesterday I took phone calls. 70% of those phone calls were Blue Jays related. That's the lowest number we've had since the baseball season ended. You know well enough, I know you don't listen every day, but I know you listen occasionally.
Well, listen more than occasionally.
Well, by the time you get into hockey season, you know, hockey takes over. And then, you know, spring, you start to twinkle in with the baseball. And these people have become baseball addicts. And they are angry about what has taken place here. And well, you were angry at first, too, and understandably.
Yeah, no question. There's no question about that. But my goal wasn't to, you know, let that anger dictate something that was stupid. Because anytime you have a, make decisions in anger, as Mr. Hardy said, you'll make a mistake. Okay? Never make a decision in anger. You know, so what the goal was to keep everybody together. Let's see what we could do for this year. And even if we go back to what we talked about earlier, it wasn't that we were going to win at all costs, you know, and just give away the farm system so that we could end up, you know, looking good ourselves. Because that wasn't what it was all about. There was an opportunity to take there. But yes, you know what? I still believe, you know, I was going, Alex is now gone, Mark and Ross are in here, they're going to do their thing, and at the very end of the day, we have an obligation to A, support them, and B, more important than that, cheer for them. Because you know what? That's what I'm doing. I'm a Blue Jay fan, okay?
So am I.
I know you are, Bob, but I'm saying my point is I'm a Blue Jay fan. I'll always be a Blue Jay fan. You can't take that away. I won't say that about the rest of my family, but you can't take it away from me, okay? You cannot take away the fact that I will always cheer for the Blue Jays. And I am cheering for Mark Shapiro. I am cheering for Ross Atkins, and I'm going to do everything possible to make sure that they're successful.
Well, you are a diplomat, and I don't believe it for a second, but I will tell you this.
But you're wrong. But well, you're 100% wrong.
I will cheer for this team.
I understand.
Cheered for this team for 40 years.
But I'm going to do everything possible that I can do. If they have any requests of me of, like, why did you do this? You know, what are the repercussions of it? What is it like, you know, in Canada when we're doing certain things like this? I am there to give them the advice that they want. They have to ask for it because I'm certainly not going to offer any more than anybody would offer to me, you know, when you take over a role.
All right, 2 months into the job.
Right.
How many times has he asked?
I would say,
honestly,
I'm going to tell you right now, he's been in once a week for the last 3 weeks.
Once a week?
Yep. No, but, you know, I'm not there all the time. It's not like he can come in. It wasn't like I got there at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, like in the old days, you know, and stayed till 6 or 7. You know, I'm gone. I'm retired. I've had this retirement gig before. And the reality is, Bob, that, you know, when he wants it, he can find me. He knows where I am.
Yeah,
and so, but the issues, and I'm not going to get into the issues he brought up, you know, because, but, you know, the ones that he's come in with, you know, are relevant, they're profound, and, you know, I've given him what I think and why we did certain things the way we did them, and hopefully he digests it, and then he moves from there. But it's his show. It is not important what I think right now. It is important that if he asks me, you know, and can put it in, like I said, you know, like Pat and Alex digest things, it is important that, you know, he has the information. But he is the CEO. and let's support them. Let's give them a chance, and let's cheer this thing on because we got a good team for next year. So why not just carry on from where we were before?
Blah, blah.
You do. Because you know what?
No, I don't.
No, you don't. But you know, once we start playing the games, I mean, the biggest problem that we have right now is, you know, this next, you know, we've had that the 4 months that are off, and we got a taste, and we had some fun, you know, and, you know, while we didn't get to
Well, that's why you got fans where they are, because you got them excited. As excited or more excited. I would argue more excited. I have argued more excited than 92 and 93. No. I think this fan base is more excited than they were in 92 and 93 right now.
Not even a question. I mean, I'm
I thought you were going to say not even close.
It's not even close, but it's not even a question.
We've never seen this.
No, I've never seen this. I'll tell you what. Part of it was because, you know, we kind of drifted up. You know, we had a plane like that. This one
in
after
the 80s, yeah.
In the 80s. Well, 85 was a good year. 84
like
was a good year. Everyone forgets about 84 because Detroit was so good.
35-5 to start the year.
35-5. What were we out in June 1st? Four games?
Yeah.
Five games. I mean, you know, and they were 35-5 to start the year. But, you know, at the 85 was good. 87 was good. 89, we came back, you know, when Cito came in, you know, took over team 12-24, won 89 games. You know, you start looking at, you know, that 1990, you know, we went to the final game or two. The 1991, we're in the playoffs. 92, 93, we win the World Series. This one, all of a sudden, it happened. And the work that had been done by, you know, the Steve Brooks and the marketing department and Robbie Alomar and, you know, whether it's this Tournament 12, whether it's the clinics across the country, whether it's the caravan going coast to coast, you know, and we had a great group that brought everybody. And then you had the Vancouver connection and the Montreal games. And so, like, everyone was there. So, you know, all of a sudden it was the city, then it was the province, then it was the country. You know, and you could see the ratings and you could feel the excitement. And you know what? To be part of it, I mean, was quite special. I mean, I consider myself very, very fortunate to have been part of something that I don't know if we'll see again, because all of a sudden we'd had the 22 years of, you know, nothing. All of a sudden, boy, is this team fun
nowhere.
To watch?
Out
I mean,
nowhere,
hit yeah. home runs, you know, got good pitching, you know, got kids, got, you know, I mean, you got Pilar making plays in the outfield. You know, it was just great to watch.
When you heard about Rogers looking to replace you, why didn't you quit?
I didn't think that was the right thing for a leader to do. But it wasn't about me. It was about, you know, trying to keep everybody together and trying to make sure that we got ready for the 2015 season. It was as simple as that, Bob. I felt it was my job. I mean, that was the first reaction. You know, screw this. But then you wake up in the morning and you say, hey, that's not the answer. That is not the answer, okay?
Did you think
I have guys that, you know, that I have worked with. I've never looked at, you know, my job as anyone working for me. I work with people. I've always believed that,
I know.
And people that have worked with me, it was very important for me to make sure that I did everything possible so that they could at least get their feet on the ground, and that if we don't have this change, because in sports, as you know, and it does not matter the team, as soon as you have change, there are changes throughout the organization. Throughout the organization. And it's time-tested, and there's nothing wrong with it. But that's what happens. And so you look at it, and you say to yourself, okay, what's my job? My job is to make sure that we go forward. And, you know, from the time I heard about, you know, the contract with Jerry, I mean, you know, from that point in time, I never told anybody about it. I mean, I gutted it out, you know. Alex traded for Donaldson in that period. He never knew anything until the winter meetings of 2005.
After you heard about it, you didn't call anybody.
Didn't tell anybody in the organization. I took counsel from some people, but I didn't tell anyone in the organization.
You didn't go to anybody and say, what the hell's going on?
Well, I didn't say that. I'm talking about the people that work for the Blue Jays.
No, I'm talking about the people at Rogers who initiated the movement.
Well, yeah, but, you know, yes, the answer to that is yes, okay? But I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm going to tell you what I told you when I came in here last year. What happened, happened. What didn't happen. And the result is where we were. And the result, as best I can say, was a pretty damn good result for the 2015 season.
You've had 2 months, give or take, of whatever this is, retirement. You're not really retired, but are you at the point where you miss it? Are you at the point, especially given the prospects for this team going to Dunedin in February, the chance to actually win, we don't know whether it's going to happen, but we both acknowledge that this team hasn't been in this good a position starting a year since 93. Even 92. I'll say 92 because 93, we had the 12 different changes.
12 changes. I mean, that's what we're...
Yeah. 20, half the roster. Yeah. Half the roster was different.
That's where we brought Molly and Stu and the group.
How do you feel about this?
I feel good. You know, here's the point. I have done this, Bob. I mean, you know, like I morphed into, and I hope it was seamless back in 2002 when I left Major League Baseball, you know, and I got involved, you know, in a few corporate boards and I got involved with the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. I kept my relationship. Strangely enough, you were talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame, you know, and, you know, I've been on that board since 1997. And, you know, and it's a great board and the things that, you know, it keeps me involved in the game that way. I went to the games, you know, I stayed out of the way. I never went and, you know, bothered Paul or anybody that way. And I would like to, you know, Paul Godfrey, I would like to think that, you know, that I can enjoy it the same way. I like going to the games. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you in sports. I mean, you know, you talk about all sports, but for me, you know, once spring training starts, you know, like my social schedule, my business schedule, everything else, you know, speaking schedule, what it might be, is all around what's the home schedule. You know, you put it there, you say, when's it playing? So, you know, I look forward to it because I enjoy going to the games and I enjoy being around the people that are in the game.
So you've had your office, if I'm not mistaken, at first at the old barn.
The old barn.
And now...
The lovable old barn.
Yeah, I liked it.
There's no question.
History would have been a lot different if we didn't have those, but the
exactly.
Polish press box to hang out in. You've had your office nonstop at the Rogers Center since the building opened. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Even your time at Major League Baseball?
Yes,
even your time when you had no relationship really with the team?
Yeah, I kept... Well, I moved my office in 1997 down the hall. And then I came back, the answer is yes. I mean, I've had an office and an office right on the 300 level.
Do you have a title with the Toronto Blue Jays?
I self-named myself former president CEO, and I have some letterhead, and I just crossed that out, and I just put formerly, okay? But the answer is no, I don't have a title. But, you know, I would like to think that I am an ambassador of sorts. Ambassador is the right word? I don't have any idea. But I will be out there selling the game of baseball, selling the Toronto Blue Jays, and, you know, trying to drum up as much support because I just think it's the greatest game in the world.
Would you like Rogers to ask you if you would like a title? Would that mean something to you?
You know, Bob, that's a very interesting question, but the answer is it wouldn't mean anything to me because I really didn't care when I was the president. You know, like I never walked around saying I was the president, the CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. They asked me, what do you do? I work for the Blue Jays. You go through customs, I work for the Blue Jays. You never say those types of things. It's not part of me because I kind of get embarrassed. Like, I mean, people think, boy, this guy must be smart. We know that's not true. So the fact of the matter is, you know, if they did, fine, but you know, it's not really that big a deal with me. What, you know, I would like to think that, you know, that I could enjoy the games, that I could enjoy being received and being around and, you know, not looked on as any type of distraction. But that is up to me too, not to be the distraction. I mean, that's a key part of it. I mean, I can't be distraction. I can't be second guessing. I can't be saying this is what I would do. You know, and so right now it goes back to what, you know, I had before, you know, which is, you know, all the answers under the accountability. I mean, you know, and that's the beauty of this thing. And so I would like to think that I would still be able to contribute when they wanted me to contribute because there's something that somewhere along the line someone will ask me that I can help them with.
Well, so here's what you can do. You can be the ventriloquist, and I'll be the dummy. You whisper to me, and I got 2 more years left in my deal.
No,
I'll,
you might.
I'll talk. Yeah, I might.
Well, you got the 2 years.
That's before tonight. You know, it could be Merry Christmas. See you later. And you and I and Alex Anthopoulos will be playing golf together.
Exactly.
Yeah, in Florida or someplace. Is there anything left to do?
From my perspective, I mean, you know, there's really nothing other than to make sure that the transition is as smooth as can be when, you know, it started from a very deep hole. And let's be realistic about it and honest about it. I don't think that we're knocking about that. And so anything I can do for that. And then hopefully, you know, we get into spring training, you know, we have a good and a healthy spring training and we start the season in Tampa, but we come back and we play Boston, the Yankees, those first, you know, 6 games that we play at home. you know, and that we have a good homestand to begin with, and we get off the season well, and, you know, anything that you can do to, anything we can do to promote the game of baseball in this country, because, you know, it is just, to me, something that, you know, we have a responsibility to do. You know, it's not that, you know, that you ever want to think of yourself in the terms of some type of an evangelist or, you know, anything of that nature. But, you know, if you can make it better than what you found it, you know, that's what the goal is all about. So anything I can do that would be what I'd be trying to do.
What is most intriguing about this entire conversation is that at the end of it, you still refer to the Toronto Blue Jays as we. And you are either a dumber man or a bigger man, and I'm quite certain the latter than I would be. You know I love you. And I'm gonna miss you, even though I will see you. Thanks for coming in,
Bob. Thank you, and all the best to you and the family for a very Merry Christmas.
Paul Beeston.